Let's talk finance. Wouldn't it be convenient to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one spot? Yahoo Finance does just that. It consolidates your portfolio views and offers expert analysis, making it easier to manage your investments. Let's not beat around the bush. You want to grow your portfolio, fight inflation, pay off debts, and achieve financial freedom. Yahoo Finance provides the news, data, and tools to make that happen. You may think you've covered all the bases, savings, researching, and investing smartly. But to truly excel, you need Yahoo Finance in your corner. A holistic perspective is crucial for success, and Yahoo Finance ensures you have it. With a massive community of over 90 million users monthly, Yahoo Finance is here to guide you on your path to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. In my early days, I faced a pivotal moment in my career. Instead of following the herd into traditional finance, I charted my own course. Despite skepticism, I founded my investment firm driven by a belief in economic truth and fiscal responsibility. Through perseverance, I established myself as a leading voice in finance, proving that sometimes blazing your own path is the best way to succeed. To get what you want, sometimes you have to challenge the status quo and blaze your own trail. That's what Harry's did. Seeing people tricked by expensive razors, Harry's took a stand. Instead of pricey options, they offer high-quality razors at a fraction of the cost. That's why when it comes to grooming my face, I use Harry's. Harry's understands the value of quality without breaking the bank. Their razors provide a smooth shave every time, and their shaving gel leaves my skin feeling refreshed and moisturized. So don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/gold. That's harrys.com/gold for a $3 trial set.
The Peter Schiff Show.
Yesterday, the government reported a surprise upward revision to the original estimate for third quarter GDP. The first estimate was 3.5%, and pretty much everybody was looking for a downward revision. The consensus was down to 3.3. Some estimates were as low as 3%. Even personally, I thought maybe we would have come in just below 3%. The reason was all of the economic data that had been released since the first estimate was way below expectations, way below what the government statisticians had used when they were preparing their original estimate. So since the data that we actually had was not as good as what was anticipated at the time of the estimate, it, you know, made sense that they would have to make a downward revision. Instead, they pretty much upwardly revised just about every category. So that now, according to the government, GDP increased at 3.9% for the third quarter. Now, it's still below the fourth quarter, but a solid number. So two back-to-back big numbers. When you average it in with the minus 2.1, I guess, from the first quarter, I think now we're on an annual pace of 2% for the entire year. Now, I'm still scratching my head at this revision. They're going to revise it again. So who knows? Maybe they'll make a downward revision the last time they do it. And I still anticipate that the fourth quarter is going to be significantly below not only the third quarter, but below the expectations. Because not only has all the economic data, or almost all of it, been weak, look at the data we got this week. It's been one bad report after another. In fact, it's like a deluge of bad economic data that is washing over the economy and the markets, and no one seems to care. I mean, you get a trickle of good news, but then you get, you know, a tidal wave of bad news, and people keep talking about how great the economy is. In fact, after we got the release of the third quarter GDP, Jim Cramer on CNBC was just ranting about, oh my God, he says stuff like, you know, we've got the strongest economy on the planet Earth, with it, maybe except for India, which is nowhere near the case. I mean, there are plenty of economies that are doing better than 2% growth for the year. to say that we've got the strongest economy in the world, except for India. And of course, you have to look beneath the surface. What is the source of our supposed economic growth? It's debt and consumption and financial bubbles. Certainly, if you want to look at the U.S. economy based on exports, based on, you know, production, manufacturing, a savings rate, things like that, clearly we're not even close to one of the strongest economies in the world. So we're not productive. We're just blowing more money than other economies. We're just going into debt faster than other economies, and we're spending that borrowed money faster. So we're simply mortgaging our futures at a rate that no other economy can match. To say it means that we're the strongest economy on the earth is just this mindless cheerleading that you get on the, you know, conventional financial channels. But let's go over. This is only Wednesday. And Wednesday, we got, I'm going to count the economic numbers we got out this morning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 data points were released. 9 for 9 were below estimates, expectations. 9 out of 9. I mean, what's the odds of that? I mean, if you were going to get random numbers that were above estimates or below, but you're 9 for 9, and not only below, but way below. You're talking, in most cases, really bad numbers, not just below estimates, but bad numbers, 9 out of 9. And I'll get to the economic statistics that came out this morning, but let's backtrack to Monday and look at some of the bad news that we got there. First of all, the Chicago Fed National Activity Index, that was supposed to come in at 0.5. Instead, it came in at 0.14. They revised last month's from 0.47 to 0.29. And now the three-month moving average, which last month stood at 0.25, which was now revised to just 0.12, is now a negative 0.01. So a pretty big deterioration in the National Activity Index as measured by the Chicago Fed. Then on Monday, we got the PMI flash services number. That was, I think, the biggest, the lowest number in 7 months. They were looking for 57.8. Instead, they got 56.3, so a pretty big reduction from the prior month. And we got the Dallas Fed manufacturing. I think the estimate was around 12. We got 10.5. The index for the prior month was at 13.7, production index at 13.7. That down to 6.0. That one wasn't too terrible. But again, the numbers are coming in worse than expected. And even yesterday, when we got the GDP report for the third quarter, we also got corporate profits for the third quarter, which were way down over the prior quarter. Last quarter, we had 4.6%. Now we're down to 3.8% in corporate profits. That's a big plunge in corporate profits. I mean, supposedly the economy is growing, but corporate profits are shrinking. What else do we get? We got the Case-Shiller Index yesterday. And that, again, was another bad report, especially if you look beneath the surface. And year over year, the price increases continue to decline. The prior month, we were at year over year price increases of 5.6%. Now we're down to 4.9% on Case-Shiller. So again, the housing recovery, the bubble that was reflated by the Fed, that bubble is fading. You know, and by the way, I recall when Cramer was ranting about, you know, the economy, and if you have a strong economy, it doesn't matter what the Fed does. Well, what if the only reason your economy looks strong is because of the Fed? To say it doesn't matter what the Federal Reserve is doing when it's all about the Fed, it's all about cheap money. That's the only thing that matters. That's the problem, because the real economy, the real profitability of corporations, not the engineering they can do with share buybacks and cheap money. It's all about the Fed and the fact that Cramer doesn't even understand this. The big number, though, one of the bigger shockers from Tuesday was the consumer confidence number. This was a huge drop. They were looking for 96.5 for consumer confidence, and this was for November, right? They're looking for 96.5, and they got 88.7. I mean, that's well below. The lowest estimate anyone had was 94.8, 88.7. And they even revised last month's down from 94.5 to 94.1. But that's a huge plunge. So if the economy is so much better than everybody thinks, why are corporate profits going down and why is consumer confidence plunging? I mean, it's still high, but nowhere near as high as it was. I mean, why isn't it improving along with a supposed improvement of the economy? And I think that this number is just beginning to fall. And remember, this is happening against the backdrop of lower oil prices, which oil prices, by the way, continue to fall this week. I think we're now below $74 a barrel as OPEC is failing to agree on any kind of production cuts. But again, I think the weakness in oil is temporary because it's based, A, on the global slowdown, but B, on the strength of the dollar, which is predicated on the false belief that we have a legitimate U.S. recovery and that as such the Fed can stop doing QE and raise rates. Neither of those assumptions is true. But, Richmond Fed. We got Richmond Fed yesterday, and that number was a big drop. Last month was 20. I mean, this is probably one of the biggest drops we've had in this index. The consensus was for 16 for the current November, and the range was between 12 and 24. That was the range of estimates. So the lowest estimate out there was for a number of 12 for the Richmond Fed Manufacturing Index. The high was 24. We got four. That's it. 75% below would have been estimated, right? And what, 80% below or whatever the prior month. So again, another really bad look at the U.S. economy when the GDP was just upwardly revised. But Wednesday, today, so far, has been, again, this has been the biggest data dump, because Thursday, tomorrow, the market is closed. So all the economic data that we would have got on Thursday was dumped on the markets today. So we got 9 big releases. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, we are 9 out of 9 in missing expectations. 9 for 9. And the economy is supposedly so great. First, let's look at mortgage applications. They were down 4.3% on the week. And more importantly, the purchase index, right? And this is despite these really low interest rates. The purchase index was down 10%, 10% drop. So the refinance index was down 4%. So when most of the mortgages are refis now, they're not purchases. So the composite index, which includes purchases and refis, was down 4.3%. But that got the bad news started. Then we got the durable goods numbers, October durable goods. And on the surface, it was better than estimates because they were looking for minus 0.5 and they got plus 0.4. The problem is that was all the result of about a 45% surge in military aircraft parts that were ordered. So when you strip out transportation, which that category is in, instead of up 0.5, which was the consensus, we got minus 0.9. Minus 0.9. And in fact, ex-defense, it was a negative number too, even if you... But ex-transportation, which is what a lot of people look at as the key number because you get rid of the volatility, we were down 0.9. Big miss over the expectation of plus 0.5. Another negative economic report. Then we got the jobless claims, which normally would come out tomorrow. Now remember, last week I said that we were inching closer to 300,000. I thought we were going to go through it. Last month we got 291,000, which was the fourth week in a row that unemployment, weekly unemployment claims had gone up, and the fourth week in a row that we had missed expectations for them to go down. Well, now it's 5 weeks in a row because the consensus was for a drop to 286,000. Instead, we exploded up to 313,000 weekly claims. So my prediction there was right. We're now back above 300,000, and I think we're headed higher. And just to add insult to injury, as they normally do, they revised last month's up. Not a lot, but from 291 to 292. So they made last week's worse, and this week an explosion, up 21,000 jobs, up 22,000 jobless claims from the original 291 estimate of the prior week. So that's pretty bad news for a Fed that's trying to hang its hat on the reduction in unemployment. Then we got personal income and spending. Here's another big miss. The consensus was for personal income to rise by 0.4 and personal spending to rise by 0.3. Instead, both were up by 0.2. So on the income front, we got half the gain that was anticipated. And spending went up as much as income, which means the savings rate stayed the same at 5% because pretty much everything that was earned was spent. But again, I think a healthy economy generates savings because people have more money than they need. They don't have to spend every last cent they have on food and electricity. They have enough to save, enough left over to save, and now the savings can finance capital investment. But none of that is going on. But again, if you're looking for consumer spending to rise, you ain't going to get it based on this lackluster income. Now, of course, the government, they're claiming that prices are up 1.6% year over year. That's the core PCE. That's what the Fed looks at. And so they think, well, you know, we're still, you know, beating that maybe because year over year income and spending are up higher than 1.6%. But again, I don't believe that 1.6% number. I think it's higher, and so I think adjusted for a realistic inflation rate, incomes and spending are declining, not rising. Chicago PMI, that came out this morning, and what did we get there? The consensus estimate was 63.2. We got 60.8. That's a pretty significant miss. It's down 66.2. From October, the November, 60.8. You know, there were some people looking as high as 65. The lowest estimate was 62. Of all the analysts surveyed, the lowest estimate was 62. We got 60.8. So again, we got lower than the lowest estimate, which seems to be par for the course these days. Not only you're coming in below consensus, but coming in below the lowest possible estimate of what the number should be. What did we get on consumer sentiment? That was another index that came out today. Okay, this one was not that bad. It still missed. They were looking for 90, and they got 88.8. Although that's still below the lowest estimate. The consensus of opinion was for 89.5 all the way up to 94.8. And instead, we got 88.8. So again, we're below the low end of the range, even though the consensus was 90. We didn't miss the consensus by that much. But again, it's still a miss on that one. I don't know. There was a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index came out at 40.7. That was slightly above the prior month. But you know what? I don't know what the estimate was. So actually, I don't know if this one was a miss because I can't tell what they were looking for. So maybe I don't know. Maybe it's not 9 for 9. I think I was counting that one. It might be 9 for 9, but it might only be 8 for 9. I'm not, because I can't tell what they were looking for. But new home sales numbers came out. These were below estimates, that's for sure. They were looking for 470,000. Instead, we got 458,000. Not quite below the lowest estimate of 440, but well below the top end of 490, 458. Inventories, though, of unsold homes continue to grow. So that doesn't bode well for that index in the future, nor does the pending home sale index. That came out. That also came out below estimates. They were looking, well, actually, last month was 105. We got 104.1. I don't know what the consensus was now. I'm looking at this. I know that pending home sale index month over month, yeah, the consensus here for the month over month, was 0.6, a plus 0.6. The range was a plus 0.2 all the way down to a minus 1. Right? So some people thought the index of pending home sales would go up 2%. The most negative forecast was it would drop by 1%. The consensus, the mean where everybody was plus 0.6. What did we get? Minus 1.1. So we exceeded the lowest estimate. We were below the lowest estimate, well below the consensus. So again, I mean, it's a deluge. It's not just a trickle. It's a flood of bad economic news. Yet people are still looking back at yesterday's GDP number and thinking the economy is great. Everything is great. Nothing to worry about. You know, an interesting thing in the gold market, when the better than expected GDP numbers came out, gold didn't sell off. I was expecting it to, based on that shocker of a release. And initially, it went down a few bucks, down about $5. But by the end of the day, it finished close to unchanged, just back above 1,200. But then it didn't get a lift from all the bad economic news that came out after the GDP. And so far this morning, it's about unchanged, maybe down a buck or two at the most, despite all this negative news that came out today. So I don't know why gold is kind of stuck in a holding pattern. Maybe everybody's waiting for the Swiss referendum. That vote's coming up over the weekend. Gold stocks, though, were up about 4% on the day yesterday. So they had a move, even though the price of gold did not. And today, you know, you're seeing gold stocks just slightly down. Well, there's a few scattered stocks that are positive on the day. And the dollar is generally softer. In fact, the euro is now trading back above 125. Dollar down against the pound today, against the Aussie, Kiwi, Canadian. It's even down against the Japanese yen. So the dollar is, weakening a little bit based on all this negative economic data. But it seems to me that everybody is just ignoring this. I mean, even though it's kind of like Chinese water torture with more and more bad news dripping out, it just doesn't get through to people because they're still fixated on the fantasy of this great recovery. But the data doesn't support it. I mean, maybe these GDP numbers, but again, that's backward looking. We're looking at stuff that happened in the past. It was still influenced maybe by the holdback of all the stuff that didn't happen because of the snow and the cold weather from the first quarter. But all this new data that's coming out is negative. And again, we're having all this negative data despite the huge tax cut of the big drop in gasoline prices. So the gasoline prices should be invigorating the consumer. Instead, it's just a lifeline. Because otherwise the consumer would really be drowning. We still have a lot of expectations for a good holiday season. We'll see. This is going to get started Black Friday, although some of these stores now are going to start on Thanksgiving. So it's not just Black Friday. But we'll see how this progresses, you know, throughout this shopping season. I don't think it's going to be as robust as people think. In fact, the fact that the layoffs are picking up now, when you think all these stores would be hiring more people to help with all the Christmas shopping, the fact that now you got 5 weeks in a row and the unemployment claims are rising is probably not a good sign of what the holiday shopping season is going to be. And again, that's not a sign of the economy. I mean, how much people are willing to spend. I mean, they always report this as if that's economic activity. The activity is what produces all the goods that everybody are spending. And of course, most of the stuff that people buy for Christmas is not made in the United States. I mean, maybe 1%, 2% of the stuff. I mean, think about all the gifts that you get this holiday season or the gifts that you give. Try to find one that was made in the United States. That's like a challenge, you know, to try to find a gift. Or imagine if you had to restrict your gift giving to just products that were made in the United States, right? Well, I mean, there'd be nothing under anybody's tree because, you know, first of all, you know, even the trees, I don't know. We probably import those from Canada. But I mean, if you got a fake tree, it wasn't made here. But I'm sure none of the wrapping paper was made here. And, you know, you wouldn't even have anything to wrap your non-existent preference with. Or all the ornaments. I mean, there's probably not a single ornament that wasn't made in China or someplace like that. I can't imagine an ornament being, unless it's like his handcrafted, really fancy little thing. But, you know, most of the things on the trees, the light bulbs, whatever you decorate a Christmas tree with, all that stuff is imported. So the whole holiday wouldn't exist in a sense of, you know, gifts and trees and stuff like that if it wasn't for imports. But again, the media is gonna talk about the shopping as if that's the economy. And I'll talk more about that on Friday. I'll do another podcast on Black Friday. Hey, for now, I want to also remind everybody, we're talking about holiday gifts, and you want to give the gift of economic understanding. That's the gift that my father gave me, and you can experience it the same way I did by reading his book, the first book my father ever wrote, The Biggest Con, How the Government is Fleecing You, which is an incredible book. I mean, my dad got one thing that I never got, mainstream reviews. He got hundreds of reviews from places like the Wall Street Journal. Real publication reviewed my father's book, and all the reviews were good. It was a great book. It's, what, 350, 400 pages, jam-packed with economic logic and foresight and understanding. And I've read this book several times over the years, and I learn something new every time I read it. That's how good it is. And I always hear my dad's voice when I read it. Even though I'm just reading silently, I can hear him speaking to me because he wrote it the way he thinks, because he wrote the whole thing. He didn't have any help. And he wrote this book, you know, back before they had computers. He had to write it on a typewriter. And so we had to write it and rewrite it. I mean, it was a very arduous process doing what my dad did. It was so much easier for me to write, and I had help, and I have computers, and, you know, it was a different world, but it's a fantastic book. I think it's better than anything I've written. But if you want to know, you know, how I learned what I learned or why I think the way I think, you got to read this book. And the books that I've got, I was actually very happy to find out that I've got more books than I thought I had, because I knew I had a limited number, and I was happy when we cleaned out this storage facility, because I had transferred a bunch of stuff that my dad had in storage in Las Vegas, and I had it in my office here. We moved offices, and I cleaned out a storage bin, and we had a lot more of these books than I thought. I mean, we still don't have enough for everybody, but I've got a decent supply, but they're brand new. I mean, they've been in these boxes since the day they were printed, so they've never been opened. The pages are not frayed. I mean, they're as nice as the day they were first printed. So they're in excellent condition. I looked on Amazon. You know, they're selling the cheapest new copy I could find was $90. There are some people that are selling some used copies, and no one is selling the original hard copy. I only have one copy of that myself, and there's no way I'm selling it. But I do have the paperbacks. And, you know, so I'm selling mine for $30, not $90, $30, plus with my autograph on it. Brand new, autographed by me. I wish my dad could autograph it, but he can't, but I can do it. So those $30, if you want to get another copy of The Kingdom of Maltz, or if you didn't buy one before, we were selling those for $25 a piece. I still have copies. So Kingdom of Maltz is $25. Biggest Con is $30. If you want, I got a package, one of each while supplies last, of course, of The Biggest Con, which I expect to run out of relatively soon, certainly before. I have quite a few more of the Maltzes. But if you want to get the package deal, you can get two for $50. And it makes a great Christmas gift, too, because you give the gift of logic and understanding. But people need to read that book and really see how long, right? This has been a long time coming, this U.S. economic collapse. It didn't just start. My dad wrote about it back then, and all the forces that he saw working to undermine the economy have played out over the decades. And just because we didn't have the kind of collapse that he was envisioning. I mean, we certainly had a rough decade, the 1970s, and he nailed that. But a couple of things that happened that kind of postponed the day of reckoning till, you know, about now, things that my father didn't anticipate when he wrote The Biggest Con. Number one was the enormous influx of women into the labor force. So my father was thinking about the ability of the economy to sustain itself based on the productivity of the males who were working at the time. He wasn't factoring in all these women that would, you know, get out of the, you know, out of the house and join the workforce. So that expanded the tax base, and so that bought us some time. And then the other thing that my father didn't envision at all was the degree to which we can borrow to finance our capital needs from, you know, countries like China, which was nothing when my dad wrote The Biggest Con. So it was the labor of women and the ability to borrow enormous amounts of money from other countries, and for other countries to supply America with the production that our economy could no longer produce. See, my dad was looking at our industrial base saying, well, how's America going to survive without the industry? Well, we survived based on Chinese industry. So there was no way to know at the time that we would be able to rely on the rest of the world to produce the goods that our factories were no longer capable of producing and to lend us the money that we were no longer saving. So these external factors happened, delayed the day of reckoning, but you read all the things that he writes, and you realize how prescient he was and how before his time he was when he wrote this book. So I can't stress enough how much you're going to love that book. And it's going to take you a long time to read. It's not a quick read like The Kingdom of Maltz, which is, you know, you can read it in a, you know, what, a half hour? Not even. It's just it's funny, and it's great to give people to explain money. But it's going to take you a while to read through The Biggest Con. And in fact, like me, you're probably going to want to read it more than once. That's it for today. Hey, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. And I will be doing another podcast on Black Friday. Bye for now.
Today's financial advisors behave like pro wrestling TV commentators. They scream that the recovery is strong, debt is manageable, inflation is low, and that the Federal Reserve has everything under control. They may be oblivious, but the danger is real. Looking beyond the media hype can open a world of broader investing ideas. Euro Pacific Capital is a registered investment advisor that offers stock-focused wealth management services that closely follow the strategy of our founder and CEO, Peter Schiff. We concentrate on those countries that are more closely in tune with Peter's vision of how capitalism is supposed to work. And these investments are not hard to find, provided you know where to look. Isn't it time you change the channel and let Euro Pacific put a little reality back into your portfolio? If you live in the United States and have $25,000 or more to invest, call 800-727-7922. That's 800-727-7922. Non-U.S. residents access similar strategies through Euro-Pacific Bank at europacbank.com. Euro-Pacific Capital and Euro-Pacific Bank are affiliated companies.